I'm Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing a wide range of research projects in which our academics are currently involved. I'm pleased to welcome today in the studio Dr. Sandra Dingley. Dr. Dingley read for her BA honours and master's degrees here at the University of Malta, and then read for her PhD at the University of Durham while working here as a lecturer at the university. She is director of the Edward de Bono Institute for the Design and Development of Thinking here at the university, and is a senior lecturer and conducts workshops and delivers lectures on creativity and innovation management, Foresight, the de Bono Thinking Techniques, Philosophy of Mind, and Philosophy of Artificial Intelligence to undergraduate and postgraduate students. Dr. Dingley was instrumental in setting up the Institute in collaboration with Professor Edward de Bono in October 1992. In 2004, Sandra designed and launched a new postgraduate degree, a Master of Arts in Creativity and Innovation, and has organised 6 international conferences on creative thinking here at the university. 5 books with selected proceedings of the international conferences have been edited by her and published by the University of Malta Press. As director of the Edward de Bono Institute, Dr. Dingley coordinates E-Inform, which we shall be talking about. It is the European Innovation and Foresight Masters, a 3-year project funded under Erasmus curriculum development, which involves designing the curriculum and launching a new MSc. And this will commence in October 2009. And this will be with partner universities, and I'm sure she'll tell us all about that. Welcome, Dr. Dingley. This E-Inform, this is another of these occasions where you've got a master's course which has a lot of preparation involved in it. How did you come up with the idea of creating this particular master's?
Well, I was involved in a couple of European Union funded projects before E-Inform, and one of the high points of these European collaborative projects is the networking that goes on. You get to meet other people involved in similar subjects to yourself, as I did, and one begins to discuss various possibilities for collaboration. And one of the projects I was involved in was called COST-A22. Many of them just have acronyms, but this involved foresight methodologies. And I made a number of contacts with this network. COST does really involve networks of people from different universities and research institutes in the European Union. And we started discussing the possibility of putting together a proposal for this particular project. One of the key people involved was Professor Ted Fuller, who at that time was head of enterprise at Teesside Business School in the northeast of England. And there was also Dr. Jennifer Cassin-Jenner-Harper involved as well. And that is really where the seeds were sown for this particular project.
Foresight, I've been involved in peripherally, very, very peripherally, but I think it's a very interesting concept. Perhaps we could spend 2 minutes just talking about what foresight involves.
Yes, I think that's a very good idea, because we've held focus groups with people from industry, business, organisations, and not very many people know what foresight is all about. I mean, only yesterday I bumped into somebody and was discussing foresight with him, and he told me at first sight, hearing, call it what you like, you think it might be somebody looking into a glass ball trying to predict the future, which in fact it isn't. Foresight actually involves a huge range of methodologies, many of which are scientifically validated as well. And I can run off some of the names, you know, visions, scenario analysis, weak signals, trends, whatever. There are quite a few. And foresight has become a discipline in a number of universities in a number of countries, not only in Europe. There's a very famous person involved in foresight in Australia, for example. And it deals with creating your own future, personally, socially, organizationally, university level, whatever, on a long-term basis, deliberately, in an attempt to leave behind any current baggage which drags us down into our usual ways of doing things, which may prohibit creative thinking, imagining fantastic future scenarios. And one creates a vision for a future based on a number of factors, some using methodologies, others perhaps different ones. And one then begins to create a long-term strategy in an attempt to arrive at a desired future in order to avoid what metaphorically in English is often called, you know, being like a reed in the wind, not being swept by forces beyond one's control. Of course, it is impossible to predict and to control all forces, but making an effort certainly helps a great deal. And the topic of foresight definitely has a great deal of potential, especially where organizations are concerned.
Yes, certainly the idea of looking long term is something which is very difficult for most people. Even on a personal level, it's very difficult to see 20 years ahead. And for a company sometimes, a company that's very involved in what it's doing at this particular moment, involved in market forces of the moment, it is also difficult for them to look forward, but obviously essential if they want to be able to capture the possibilities that might crop up as time goes by.
Yes, it is. However, the way foresight is used by people who are experts in that area, as for example our partners in Finland in this project are, is amazing. I was reading only recently, you know, the financial crisis, which everybody's talking about. About a year and a half ago, there was something which could have been viewed as a weak signal on one of today's technology platforms, a virtual world, which is called Second Life, which about a year and a half ago, had a very big financial crisis. All the banking system on Second Life collapsed. Now, this is all virtual. They deal in virtual money over there. But still, it's money. And if anybody was really monitoring all this, weak signals, trends, etc., they could possibly have predicted part of the financial crisis or been aware that it could have been a possibility. Nothing is certain, of course. I mean, don't get me wrong. And I'm not looking into a crystal ball, and it's very easy to see things in retrospect. But it's very interesting to see how these things happen and what weak signals are and how they can be capitalized upon, how we can use the potential of these weak signals as well.
The masters that you have been developing, what would be the aims of the masters itself? What would you be looking for at this educational level for the students to take up this opportunity?
Yes, to begin with, it's a very exciting prospect because we are four universities from four European countries, right up far in the north, Finland, Malta right down in the south, England to the west, and Germany a bit further to the east. So, you know, we're in very different parts of Europe. Each university has complementary areas of expertise, yet these four areas of expertise, which are creativity for University of Malta, innovation management for University of Potsdam, which is near Berlin in Germany, foresight or future studies for Turku School of Economics in Finland, and entrepreneurship for University of Teesside in the north of England, Even though there are four areas of expertise, one for each institution, they are very, very closely linked because creative ideas feed the innovation process. In other words, you can't have innovation management unless you have ideas to manage, some of which, very few of which, will be turned into actual innovations, products, services, or processes. Then in order to use foresight, one needs to use an element of creativity. And I have found that some of the methods we teach students for creative thinking, to come up with ideas out of the box, can easily be applied as well to doing foresight, for foresight workshops. Entrepreneurship, then, on the other hand, we are taking to mean both something useful for people who want to start up their own business, plus a necessary skill even for people in employment, regardless whether it's private or public employment, because entrepreneurship in a nutshell is really recognizing opportunities and being prepared to take risks and treating one's own area on an organizational level as one's own little business, trying to get it to move forward, adding value, not only problem solving, but trying to come up with value added. And the master's, which is mainly being offered by e-learning, because the only residential periods over a 2-year time span are 1 week, 6 intensive day seminar in each of the 4 universities spread out over 4 years. So it's 1 week in Malta in October, 1 week in Potsdam round about February, then another week in Finland the October afterwards, and another week in England about 4 or 5 months later. And we are targeting mid-career professionals who may not have the possibility to travel to another country for a longish period of time, but who would have the possibility of attending 2 6-day seminars in a year for 2 years. The rest of the work would all be able to be done online in their own time. We are using simple technologies. We are not going in for anything complicated because we are very aware of problems of using very, very high-tech digital technology, which not everybody may find easily compatible for their system. And of course, yes, it will involve hard work for anyone who applies, but they can do it all in their own time. It is not going to be what is called synchronous. Synchronous means e-learning in real time, everybody being online at the same time. We are not going to use that method. We are going to allow people to do the work in their own time using fora, videos, presentation sessions, whatever, so people can find their own time slots. And the mid-career professionals we are targeting are really people from various areas, including scientists, for example, or people with a scientific background who would like to improve their managerial skills, people with policy backgrounds, who would like to come up with more creative ideas, and people who would like to capitalize on this, you know, possibility of getting expertise from 4 different universities in 4 different countries on 4 different topics.
Well, before we continue to talk about this master's, perhaps go into a little bit more detail about the content, I'd like to remind listeners that this is Research Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and today I'm talking to Dr. Sandra Dingley. A little bit more, perhaps, about the methods. It's very interesting to see that you are actually going to be using different methods. It's not going to be just like online, as you say. It's going to be, you're going to have an element of meeting up. What do you think do they get out of the meeting up bit, and what do you think they get out of the online bit?
Yes, we have done a lot of research on what's happening in online courses. We have even had sessions delivered to all those participating in this project from the 4 universities by experts in e-learning, both locally and overseas. And we have understood that online learning on its own is not sufficient to build up synergy, networking, and team building. Therefore, we have decided that those 6 days face-to-face will be utilised not only for the delivery of content, but also for, as I said, networking, team building, some workshops for soft skills. There are elements which are rather difficult to develop online. Online is brilliant. There's a lot happening, a lot of exciting stuff. It is a continuously changing, you know, shifting sands scenario with so many improvements on a day-to-day basis, so many possibilities, which we hope to capitalise on as well as time goes by. But we want to start off in a more simple way and then build up as we go along. So the face-to-face sessions really are for team building and networking, plus content delivery, people getting to know each other.
You mentioned the fact that you were looking into what online learning is all about. So that would be sort of part of the preparations, like doing a sort of market study, research into the actual preparation of the course itself, which always takes quite a long time, actually, just getting together the ideas from these various partners, preparing the actual course itself. How long did that actually take?
Well, we've been at it now for 2.5 years, but it's been a whole lot of different tasks, what in these projects we call work packages, which we've had to complete because each of these European projects has a number of targets and quite a lot of reporting because there's a great deal of accountability both on a local level and on a European level. However, we have even had sessions delivered to us, both online and face-to-face, as I said, by experts locally. And by, for example, there was somebody who's very involved with what Open University in the UK do for distance learning. And we have learnt a lot in the process. But what is important, I find, is that we have also piloted some of the study units with some of our present master students. So we are also gradually discovering what works better and what works perhaps not so well. And that has been, you know, a huge learning curve, because it's always good to pilot something before actually going for it. So we have already built up an element of experience.
Have you discovered any cultural differences? Because you mentioned that these universities are sort of north, south, east, west. Are there differences in approaches? Do you find that you gel well intellectually, sort of you're thinking along the same lines as these other universities? Or do you find that somehow culturally that any different?
There are a few cultural differences, yes. However, at a personal level, I strongly believe in the world becoming more and more of a global village, borrowing, of course, from Marshall McLuhan. So I don't believe that there's anything that cannot be overcome with time and patience. Time is always at a premium because these projects have, as I was saying before, you know, time frames, deadlines, etc., etc. However, one of the things I found interesting was that Malta is such a small country, the smallest of all the four. We used to be a British colony up to, well, we stopped being a British colony, let's say, in my lifetime, not to mention time spans.
Decades.
And sometimes I have found, I don't want this to sound like bragging or anything, but the other three huge countries, Finland, full of resources, small population, but great resources and loads of investment, especially in innovation. Germany, of course, we all know, and United Kingdom as well. And sometimes they look on Malta, you know, Malta is small. Who are we, really? But I think we have surprised them with our motivation, determination and the manner in which we have taken this project so seriously, you know, and with a positive outlook as well.
In fact, the kind of analysis that you're talking about, where you're looking at the pilot groups, you're looking at the various, you're having meetings, you're discussing with experts, I mean, this all contributes then to the seriousness, if you like, of the final product, because what you're going to be offering to these students is something which is going to be, you know, high quality, really.
Yes, in fact, from the very start of the project in October 2006, when we started off by appointing an external evaluator who attends all meetings, and besides the meetings budgeted for in the project, which are generally, for most EU-funded projects, twice a year, we are also having regular online meetings to make sure the work proceeds as planned. And the external evaluator, who is one of the top people at University of Manchester in England, very, very well-respected person, is always present. So he is always evaluating everything that we do, every step of the way. Besides, once we had the course catalogue done, which is about 6 to 8 months ago, we also had it evaluated. We had peer review in each institution of the whole course catalogue. So here in Malta, we found somebody from another faculty who reviewed it and gave us his feedback. And each of the other institutions did the same thing in an attempt to fine-tune. Plus, in each country, we have also had focus groups with people from industry to get their feedback on what industry, private organisations expect from graduates doing a university degree at master's level on these topics. So we have been, you know, going around creating industry-academia links, and we also continued with this during a final conference which we have organised, which was a great success with participation from people from about 25 different countries.
And who are these students going to be that are going to benefit from this master's course?
Yes, as I was saying before, we are targeting mid-career professionals. We are also targeting human resources people from large organisations who may be in a position to sponsor their employees, since it doesn't involve too much time off and since it involves a lot of work in people's own time, so they can do it evenings, weekends, whenever they wish. We had some of these people attending the final conference, and we are going to continue to target them. We're also marketing locally, and I must add that locally people are now in a position to apply for funding to the new government scheme called STEPS, which will assist them, since this will be a fee-paying master's programme.
Well, in the few minutes that we've got left, I'd like to move on to another project that you've been working on, which I find particularly interesting, FairPick. What's that about?
It's coordinated by University of Bologna in Italy, one of the top 100 universities, I think, in the world. And it involves female engineers, both students and successful females in leadership positions with an engineering background, and we are working on promoting skills both concerning creativity and concerning leadership with female engineers, both as students and in leadership positions, because we understand that engineering as such has been perceived traditionally as a subject which trains minds in a more analytic manner. However, and this is also related to the new MSc, in fact I must add as well that the new master's, which starts in October, is called MSc, Master of Science in Strategic Innovation and Future Creation. But back to FairPick. FairPick will eventually create an online tool which will enable females and males, because obviously it will be publicly available, to improve their leadership skills and their creativity skills. And it will be based on the research we are conducting with female engineering students and with females in leadership positions. Because it is amazing that There are so few females with an engineering background in leadership positions, not only in Malta but also overseas. We had to identify 9 females locally with an engineering background in leadership positions in industry. And it was extremely difficult, although once we started getting there, through networks, contacts, etc., then we managed to get quite a few. I think we finally managed to identify about 20 when we only needed about 9. But initially it was extremely, extremely difficult. And we then even expanded it to include females with a more scientific background rather than only engineering.
When I first started working here at the university, I think there were 2 women in the course. Now it's, I think, about 20%. I'm shooting a number here, but it certainly increased a lot. There are many more women in engineering courses here than there were in the last, over the last 15 years. So we're doing quite well from that point of view. The idea of engineering being a male bulwark sort of is sort of receding a bit.
It is gradually, I think. I remember teaching some engineering students here at university about 10 years ago. And as you said, there would only be about 2, perhaps even 1 in the whole classroom. There are a few more now. I don't have figures at hand. But part of the project also involves taking 6 engineering students to University of Bologna for a week of training in creativity and leadership. And this is an excellent opportunity for them. And part of the project also involves another meeting here in Malta, where the engineering students, the female engineering students, we had to identify a total of 9, and they actually went out to industry to interview these other females in successful positions. And the 9 local students will be participating as well in the meeting in Malta. Unfortunately, we didn't have the budget to be able to take all the 9 of them to the week's training at University of Bologna, but yet 6. I think Malta over there will probably be having the largest number of female students attending this week's training.
Well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Sandra Dingley, for coming to talk to us today on Research Matters. If you would like further details about the University of Malta's research projects or any other information, please access our website at www.um.edu.mt. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.